Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 431, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Alish. I'm joined today by Brad Torrey from TTCScomputerservices.com. How you doing, Brad?
Doing good. How you doing, Jeff?
I am doing excellent. I'm excited to talk about the subject we're going to talk about today, because I think it's one of those subjects that I don't know a whole lot about. So I'm interested to learn what it is you know about it and how you've implemented in your business. And that is voice over IP. And it's one of those things that not every technician has to work with, but it is something that most businesses and even households nowadays actually have, that they have to, there has to be some sort of support for that stuff. And a lot of us are probably clueless as far as how to implement that, or I should say myself. There's probably a lot of people out there that maybe do know a lot about, VoIP. I don't. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say and what you've done with it in your business. And obviously it's an arm of your business that you're making money at supporting and setting up, it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely. First, just real quick, I know this is recorded, and so no one's going to hear this today, but happy Star Wars Day to everybody. Belated, I guess. It's May 4th.
Absolutely. I'm wearing my Star Wars tee with the retro poster, print on it. So,
yep, and I got my Star Wars Vans on, so we're all set.
There we go. So happy May the 4th.
That's right. May the 4th be with you.
That's right.
Very cool. Anyway, so VoIP has been something that we started doing it about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Started like learning and really getting into it, and it was almost forced on us, or we didn't want to be the one saying no, we don't know anything about that and we can't do it. So we just started jumping in there and getting to know it. I had a client opening a restaurant, and they wanted a phone system. And I knew I had a relationship with a phone installer that installed traditional phone systems, but they didn't want to spend the money for like a big phone system. And they ended up just running out the fries and grabbing those little like AT&T business, like small business phones that just plug straight into the wall and somehow they talk to each other and stuff. And they hated them because they're not real phone system phones. They don't have any kind of PBX functionality and they don't work very, I mean, they're okay for like if you got a couple of desks and you just want to turn some phones on. But this was like a nice restaurant that was trying to, they now, needed a greeting and they needed all that stuff. And so,
right. Now, what does PBX stand for?
Public exchange system, something. PBX.
I guess in layman's terms, what does it actually do for you versus, something like that you can just buy at the store and hook up?
Right. Yeah. I mean, usually when you talk about a PBX, you're talking about a system that takes a collection of phones that are sort of on the inside, all the desk phones, and then interfaces them to the public phone system. So you can receive and make calls, and then the features you get out of it vary, but generally you're looking for like maybe an auto attendant feature, some voicemail, call routing, maybe some internal conferencing, things like that, intercom. So when I say PBX, that's what I'm talking about. Any system that basically assigns extensions to phones and routes calls to phones and has auto attendant features and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So what I would relate that to, and in my understanding, my limited understanding, is it would be the same as the old switchboard operators of basically what they used to do, except now it's all done electronically.
Right. And actually funny, cause that's in my notes, like back in the day, like back in before, I don't even know how many decades ago, but yeah, there was a one-to-one line of communication, like your house or whatever phone came across a particular path to a switchboard. And if you wanted to call the other person, somebody actually had to like make a little quick patch between you and that other person. And the communication all went along like a single path. And now it's all, I mean, if you start, when you get, start talking about VoIP and stuff, it's not like that at all. I mean, it's like the way the internet's routed. It just kind of goes where it needs to go, whatever path it needs to take.
Right.
Which is partly what makes it awesome and partly what makes it very challenging. Because the path that gets there, and we'll get into that, but like the real time communication of it, and that's not really what the internet, how it was designed to work, to be real time. So, and which is obviously critical when you're on a phone conversation to hear the words that the person said in the order that they said them in.
Right. I will say this though, that what I'm, a lot of people probably run into these problems is that your cell phone actually is probably the worst communication device made ever. because they just, it depends on where you live and depends on what service you have. But most of the time, what I'm understanding from a lot of people is their bandwidth or the communication inside their homes usually sucks. And so to me, a lot of these, you know, voice over IP, it seems like you're going to get better bandwidth that you're going to be able to use, but there's probably more complication that goes into that instead of just sending stuff out over the airways.
Yeah. And VoIP definitely has the advantage of having a lot more bandwidth and quality than, any analog phone, and as long as everything's working right,
that's the key, right?
my it's kind of interesting. I haven't had a whole, this is kind of a new situation. I haven't had a whole lot of time to talk to him, but my daughter's dating this boy, and his dad is a Verizon voice over LTE engineer. That's his project right now that he's working on, is rolling out voice over LTE to really improve. I guess they're really, like, I don't know enough about cell phone stuff, but they're kind of abandoning the older model of care, you know, and utilizing LTE for data, voice, and everything. So,
okay.
It's kinda interesting. So we're going to end up having dinner or lunch or something. I'm sure he'll get all into it, and it'll be fascinating, and I won't understand half of it, and it'll be, but whatever.
But it'll be fun, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. So I'll just kind of get into my notes, basically. I wanted to talk, because, like, basically just define, like, what is VoIP and SIP, and because you'll see SIP phones interchangeably used for, when people are talking about VoIP phones. So we kind of already talked about like the old school phone system, where there was a, even though it got more automated and more complex, it feels like when you're talking about analog phone systems, as far as just like a phone in your house or even small businesses where they have four lines, they have four independent, you know, channels to the phone company, and they can have four conversations at a time. And maybe they have some system in place, like a PBX, that allows them to use those four lines over more than just four phones or whatever. But it's really one, it has this kind of lock-in feel to it, and one-to-one. Like, if you had an analog phone system, even like a PBX, if it's got 10 extension slots, then you can plug in 10 extensions to it. And if you want this phone sitting at this desk to be extension 10, you plug it into the jack on the phone system for extension 10. And that's what defines how it works.
Okay.
And then you start looking at, and the, another thing about kind of old school or analog phones that I think is an improvement to go to IP is things like a 66 block and the way that the wiring is all done. I look at a 66 block and I kind of cringe. Like, I kind of get how they work, but I don't remember how many, there's just a billion wires coming out the back, and they all just sort of connect to this block, and then you're supposed to not break it. So I just don't touch them. Like, I don't want to have anything to do with that. But when you start getting into IP based phones, it's just networking. Like, I know how to wire up an RJ45 jack, and I know how to terminate a cable. a Cat 5 cable or a Cat 6 cable. So I know everything I need to know. Like, I know how switches work. I know how routers work. And most offices are already wired to drop an RJ45 connection to each desk where there's a computer. So you can use that for your phone now. And all of a sudden, this whole like kind of scary phone business is right up my alley. Like, it's mine. And I feel bad for phone guys because if they don't learn IP phones and VoIP and all that, they're going to be dust.
Right.
At some point.
Right.
So
now, what is a 66 block? Is that just something that regular phone lines plug into? Is that what you're talking about?
If you go into like the back, you know, wherever their kind of phone connections or data comes in a small business, you'll see that like it's like a rectangular board mounted on the wall, and it's got a billion little pins on it. And that's where they actually like usually running the old like analog phone line cable. It'll terminate to that, and that's how they actually connect like the incoming phone lines to all the wiring in the building. And I don't really understand how they work, because there's like it's very simple. There's a pattern how they're wired up, and they kind of patch over. It's a lot like a patch cable. It's just more split out. Like each pair of wires will be broken out and then punched in, so it all connects up. I can't really explain it any further than that. Like I don't know how they're wired, you know.
And then from a standpoint of the regular phone line scenario, you're looking at obviously they're running the equipment and different things at another facility to get you the extensions and stuff. You're not having anything that's on premise right now. But when you're talking about VoIP, you know, you're basically running everything just straight through the internet. And, you know, if you can get to the internet, obviously you have different bandwidth that's coming in that internet cable that's going to carry, you know, it carries cable TV, it carries your internet data, and it also carries, voice over IP in the different portions of that. So I get what you're saying, because it's all very similar. If you're used to networking, there's not there can't be a whole lot different. I guess I had always thought about it a lot more complicated than actually what you're saying right now.
I'm really talking about the physical connection. I mean, it's really, VoIP seems really like it must be complicated, right?
And it's right. It does to me. When you think about phone, period, whatever type of phone, it seems like it could be complicated more than even like networking a bunch of computers together.
VoIP doesn't get complicated until something doesn't work. It's really not that hard. You can literally take a phone if it's been registered, plug it into the network jack, pick it up and make a phone call, and it calls through the cloud server that it's hosted on, and like no configuration. People will, I think Nextiva will ship you a phone that's already been pre-programmed with the extension and everything done. You plug it in and it works.
Okay.
Except for when it doesn't. So so it can be really easy, and then it's the troubleshooting that can kill you.
Okay. But,
let's see. So just to define a couple of terms, like VoIP itself, as far as I know, doesn't specifically mean anything except for voice over IP. So it basically just means you're going to utilize the network, IP-based networks in some way to make phone calls.
Okay.
Then you'll hear a lot SIP, which stands for Session Initiation Protocol.
What nerd came up with that?
I don't know, but it was awesome for them to make an acronym that has IP in it that is about something related to IP that doesn't mean internet protocol. Like, thanks for making that confusing.
But, right.
and you don't ever need to know what that means again, except that it's just SIP. And SIP's kind of IP independent. It can work over multiple protocols, but generally it works over TCP IP. All it really is like the handshake part of the process. So the two endpoints will shoot out an invitation to each other. Are we going to use this codec or that codec? Okay, are we on this port or that port? And then at that point, they agree on a UDP port to switch to for the actual voice transfer.
Okay.
And that's kind of what SIP does. SIP is just like an instant negotiation part of the process. And then RTP is the real-time transport protocol. That's what actually carries the voice traffic for the most part. And RTP you'll also find a lot in like security cameras that are IP-based and video conferencing and stuff like that.
Okay.
Those are like the main things. There's a lot of other stuff involved, but when you start having to go into any kind of troubleshooting situation or you want to know like how this all kind of works, those are like the SIP and RTP are the two things that you're going to be focused on.
Okay.
So the reason VoIP sucks, really, is because, like we were talking about, packets don't always arrive at the same, like in the same order that they were sent on the internet. That was like part of the design of the internet. It was designed so the packets could arrive out of order and they could be reassembled, and it is no big deal. But when that happens in a phone call, then that's when you get the cutouts and the siloning effect and like all kinds of weird stuff, or just like one person can hear the other person, but they can't hear the back. And so all of these layers and protocols and everything are basically designed to combat the natural state of the way the internet was designed to work and make it work for this.
Okay.
So that's why basically, like, if you want to set up VoIP for somebody, it actually doesn't even have to be utilizing the internet, which I'll talk about in a second. There's IP systems that don't involve, like, they still go to analog once the phone call hits the actual public phone system. It's just using IP to set up the phone system within your own network. But just want to like be responsible and make sure that they have if you're going to use either a SIP trunk or a hosted cloud provider, make sure that you have enough bandwidth and you've tested it in some way, and not just roll out somebody's phones and have, you know, what their business relies on daily for their operations and maybe sales and everything else, and where you're in just like this total fail situation and they want to kill you. So, or sue you, you know.
Right. Well, you know, it, and that's the hard thing in this business when you're doing any of this stuff is like everything is not 100%. And, you know, you need to, you know, you set up expectations that, you know what, most of this time this is going to work, but when it doesn't, it's probably going to take some time to fix, just so you're aware that that's the way it is. And, you know, quite honestly, I think a lot of businesses really know that that's the case, even though they will sit there and you know, try to, you know, make you feel bad and, you know, get everything fixed right now. But the reality is so many people work outside the office that they have cell phones, they have, you know, laptop computers and all this different stuff. So, and there's a lot more people that are working out of their homes. So it's like, yeah, I understand you're down, but we'll get it back up and running. But I think a lot of those people have to understand that anything electronic's not 100%. Sorry.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, go back to pen and paper or pencil and paper.
Yeah, you can throw paper airplanes across the freeway and
there you go.
Or send messages to each other.
Soup cans and a string, man.
Yep. And so, people, when VoIP systems go bad, people forget that they have problems with, I mean, landlines have problems. There maybe not a lot, but, you know, phone lines go dead. It happens.
Absolutely. You know, and that brings, it's kind of a funny story. I remember being in my first house and somebody was outside. I can't remember. We didn't have grass, I don't think, yet. And the phone line was laying on top of the ground and it wasn't buried yet. And I think somebody was out there weed whipping and basically cut the line. So I called up the telephone company at the time and I said, well, I said, the telephone line's cut. I said, I need you guys to come out here and fix it. And they told me 2 weeks. And yeah, that was after we got rid of Ma Bell and decided, hey, let's diversify a little bit. Yeah, that was dumb. But anyways, so 2 weeks, I'm like going, are you kidding me? I'm going to be without a phone for 2 weeks. And that was back when, you know, cell phones weren't super popular or even super cheap at the time. And so I'm sitting there going, all right, let me splice this together myself. So I went out there and I'm tying the phone line together. And all of a sudden I hear the phone start to ring. And just as I'm yelling, don't pick it up, somebody picks it up and I get a nice little jolt. It was great. So that was awesome. That was, you know, and that, after that I said, you know what, I'm not dealing with phone lines anymore. And I went to 100% cell phones.
Yeah. I mean, we're mobile and everything, so obviously our operation's completely mobile phone based. But yeah, I talked to Michael. I'm like, well, you guys could put an extension on your VoIP system to your cell phones and never have to deal with any of this crap.
But right, exactly.
Then you have VoIP over, because you can set up an extension on your cell phone, right? But then you're using your data to make calls.
Correct. Right.
That's not reliable. That's even worse. But
yeah, in any time you're piggybacking, sometimes between the bad cell phone service and the bad internet service, you know, you get that lag time in there. And I even notice it with the cell phones that I'm not, you know, depending on where I'm at, it's not always like real time. Now, the message doesn't get garbled. It doesn't get, you know, packets don't, I don't think, get put in the wrong place. It's just that the signal is weak or whatever. So going back, so as far as you're going in, you're setting these things up, you're kind of, you know, you're kind of learning a little bit about them. And where do you start or how do you put this all together where you go, okay, here's what we need and here's how we're going to set this up and here's our process?
I got all that in here.
Okay. So all right. We'll keep on going.
All that up. But yeah, we were putting together a questionnaire for people that are considering VoIP or people we want to talk, you know, we want to sell a VoIP system to them.
Okay.
The first question on there now is, how tolerant are you of call quality being, you know, intermediately, sometimes not being perfect?
Oh, okay.
Because if you're sensitive to that at all, I'm not going to do it. Because if that's a deal, like, I don't want it. Why would I put myself in that situation where I've installed this system, told you it was going to work out, and you're so sensitive to the slightest call quality disturbance that you're going to complain and want your money back? Then we're not going to, let's just not do that. Let's not proceed. You know, we'll save all of us will save a lot of trouble.
Right. Okay.
So if you're going to do VoIP systems, one of the biggest things that you need to do or get good at doing is telling people it would be irresponsible to install this system for you. Like, you're not going to be happy with it. And that could be because their internet connection's not steady enough. They have the wrong kind of internet connection. They're not willing to spend enough to get the bandwidth that they could get from the internet connection they have. It could be that they are so mission critical on their phones that the tiniest little sound, you know, disturbance, or sometimes they're not perfect systems. They work pretty well. And especially if somebody has good internet, they're pretty much always up.
Right.
But if they really are going to be extremely sensitive to any kind of call quality issues, then it's not for them. We're kind of building out this little survey process to make these deployments go a little smoother, and that's based on a couple of mishaps we've had.
No, that's good. Yeah, that's good knowledge right there.
Yeah. Having had some pretty significant setbacks, we're still doing it. So that's should set some people's mind at ease if they're hearing this, going like, why would you do this to yourself?
Right.
Considering all the downside, where if your internet connection goes down, your phones are dead. If your bandwidth gets used up by a rogue application, your phones sound like crap. If like, there's so many reasons that VoIP is not going to work. So, like, why are you doing this? So the answer to that is, if you get the right company involved and you're the right provider and you've structured your account correctly to match the company size and call volume, they could save a significant amount of money on their monthly bill. There's better call quality definitely if both ends are using VoIP, because the bandwidth's better and the voice quality is definitely better. One thing you can do is, if you're using a hosted solution, you can have one centralized solution and multiple offices all connected to one phone system, and you can still use phone numbers to separately route calls to this office or that office, but you have this amazing ability to take like, you know, 2 to 10 or more offices and transfer calls in between offices and route calls between offices and do all kinds of great stuff that you really couldn't do very well or at all with the old school phone system. You can be totally mobile, so you can take an extension and move it over there, assign an extension to a cell phone, easily just say, you know what, all the calls going to this for now, to this extension, now I want them to go over there because that's where I'm sitting today. Like you can do all these great things, and it's like freedom and mobility, and you're not locked in, basically.
Right.
It's the advantage of it. So, okay. And you could save some money. I mean, it's not always a money saver, but you get a lot for the same price or cheaper. So,
okay.
All right. So what else do I have in here? My notes. So different kind of setups. There's so many ways that when you start talking about VoIP systems, I'll kind of do some broad strokes of okay. the different architectures and different things that we've come across. So there are kind of open and closed architectured phone systems. One example is like a ShoreTel system. It's still IP-based. It still connects to the network. You're still using RJ45 jacks and everything in your office. But you have ShoreTel phones that talk to a ShoreTel controller that's on the network. And you're not going to go out and buy another brand of phone necessarily and have it be able to either may not talk at all on the system or it may not be able to access all the features of the system. AT&T has a couple of different, you know, there's several providers that created, they have a phone system and it's very similar to your old school PBX systems in the sense that this system works with these phones, but it's got the advantage of being IP-based and network-based.
Okay.
And then there's basically this kind of free-for-all open SIP architecture where you can use 3CX, PBXs or free PBX or Asterisk or Elastix or any number of different like PBX systems. And they'll all just talk to any SIP phone that... that connects to the IP and is registered. So you could get some Polycom phones, you could get some Cisco phones, you could get some Yealink phones, and as long as they're all registered on that system, they will work. And you're not tied into any particular phone type or architecture.
Now, are these physical phones or are these software phones?
Both.
Okay.
So like if you're doing, we'll get into it real quick in a minute, free PBX or something like that as like a test environment, you can just install a SIP app, on your phone, any phone or on your PC and have a soft phone and register it and it'll work just like, Skype or, you know, like a phone. So,
right. Okay.
And it can have an extension number assigned to it and you can have it in your routing rules and all that kind of stuff. So you don't actually have to have phones. You could roll this out in a business where everybody sits at a desk and puts a USB headset on and they don't need a phone. So
very cool. All right.
And then if you're doing these phones, you can have an on-premise like PBX or a hosted cloud-based PBX. There's a different level of that where, it's like strictly a hosted solution and you almost don't even have access to the PBX features of it necessarily. They're just kind of like users. We don't use any of those systems because they're to us and our customers, they're cost prohibitive because they charge per user. So I don't have a lot to be able to explain necessarily about them, but RingCentral, 8x8, Nextiva, you know, those are all kind of those purely hosted systems. Versus you could take a free PBX droplet on a cloud server and then basically you're just managing your own PBX in the cloud, or you could go to a provider like what we use is Voice Carrier, and they have free PBX droplets that they manage completely, but we have access to get into the PBX and assign extensions and do all the stuff we need to do, but it's hosted up in the cloud. So we get all the benefits, But they charge us per like how many concurrent calls. So there's so many, there's companies that'll charge by the minute. There's companies that'll charge by the user. There's companies that'll charge by concurrent calls. There's a lot of different ways to structure these. So depends on the provider and the setup you have. It gets, so this is where it starts to get a little complicated. It's like when you start actually getting into how to structure it and what solutions to go with. Let's see.
Well, and what are your controls? I mean, are you using software-based controls or these physical controls on the phone themselves to, you know, get the extensions and different things set up?
Or how does usually what you do, like a typical setup, no matter what you're working with, is you'll have an IP-based phone. So either like Polycom's are popular. The Yealink, we use Yealink a lot. They're very affordable and the quality on them has been really good. But basically you take a SIP phone and you tell it where the server is, which it could be a local IP or it could be a static IP on the internet, or it could be just like a domain name. And you give it a username and a password. And that's pretty much all you have to do to that phone. So it logs in and registers with the PBX wherever it is. And its username is its extension number usually.
Okay.
And that's it. Like, that's all you have to do to that phone. And then wherever the PBX is, we'll manage. There's almost infinite possibilities that it could do, but you could have multiple phone numbers. So like your sales team maybe has a phone number. And so those extensions associated with the sales team will ring when that phone number receives a call. Or it'll go to what's called an IVR, which is that like kind of auto attendant setup. So it'll say like for sales, press one or whatever, press two. And so that's where the PBX generally, you're going to get a web interface. So you just go to whatever the address is and log in, and that's where you're going to say like, okay, this is a group of extensions that I want to do whatever. Like, I want this incoming call to go there. So when you're configuring like the rules of how the calls will go, you're usually going to a web-based PBX interface. And actually the phones, because they're IP, they're the same thing. Like, you go to a web page at that phone's IP address and configure it, but you don't do much of the phones in general. Usually, okay. They just log into the server, and then everything else is managed by the server. So, once the PBX part is set up, usually you can like if you're doing an office of maybe 10 or 20 computers, you can get phones, as long as you're not doing any wiring, you can have those deployed and ready to go in an hour and have the whole job done. So,
oh wow.
That's been our experience most of the time. It usually goes pretty smooth. We just go in, put the like three pieces of information into the phone that it needs, and it's on. Good to go.
Now, how much bandwidth are you finding that you typically need for, you know, whatever, 5, 10, 15, 20 phones?
Well, a good rule of thumb is to start with a baseline of about like 100K in both directions per call. So,
okay, per simultaneous call, correct?
Right, right.
Okay.
So, like, if you have 10 phones, but generally only, you know, you only care about being able to manage 5 calls at a time, you just kind of, you look at it like that. Okay, like, so we're going to have 5 callers at a time. I would add one to that just to be safe, because bandwidth isn't absolute.
Right.
It gets clouded, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on over the network, so... So you go, okay, 100K for 5, so that's 500K, add another 100 for safety, so that's 600K, and then actually just, you know, add a couple more just because. And then, you know, so, but that's, 100K is a good, like, starting point. And then you want to make sure that you have enough bandwidth above and beyond that to manage the rest of your network needs. So we had like, a situation where the cloud backup was destroyed. It was just, even though we had limited its bandwidth in the router, for some reason it was not obeying. The router wasn't doing what it was supposed to be doing. And so it was like, sucking up every bit of upstream bandwidth that it could to push this update or push the backup out. And so the people in the office could hear the people calling in just fine, but nobody could hear them talking out.
Oh.
Because everything coming, you know, that's where as they're speaking, it's going out. And that's the bandwidth was just being completely devastated. And this is another, I was going to talk about this later, but I might as well mention it now because we're on it. If you have cable and they do any kind of bursting, cable internet, like coax internet or like Time Warner, whatever, Comcast, usually they'll give you a burst of speed if you need it. So if you start demanding all this bandwidth going up, they'll give it to you. So we were getting like, even though we were only supposed to get 1.5, we were getting like 3 or 4 megs going up.
Okay.
And then after a while, they're like, okay, you had your fun. And now we need to balance we need the average to be what you're actually paid for.
Right.
So now they just like drop, they'll dip you down below your normal speed for a while so that you can kind of level it off. So while whatever it is consuming all this upstream bandwidth is going on, which in our case, it was this backup, it's eating up all the data. So there's no bandwidth for the phones. So you have terrible phone experience. Then when it's done, Time Warner starts taking back, you know, they kind of rebalance the force. And they bring balance to the force. And so your bandwidth is kind of is extremely limited for a little while. So your call quality sucks then too.
Okay.
So what I was explaining to you, and this, I got lucky. When I called customer service, I was immediately, just because he was the next guy on the rotation, I got a level 3 engineer. And I think we were on the phone for like an hour, not to resolve the problem, but because he was giving me this, like all these amazing nuggets. I was like, oh God, keep talking.
Right.
And so that was one of the things he explained. So he's like, if you can set up bandwidth constraints in your router so that you never exceed your bandwidth, then you'll never have that throttling effect, like that, you know, the yo-yo effect.
Okay.
And you won't get the burst, but you also won't get the, you know, the offset. So,
right.
So that's what we've got set up there now too. We have a total bandwidth limit and then specific guarantees to give the phones enough bandwidth. And we went to I guaranteed all the phones as a group collectively, I added up 200K both directions for the group for each phone.
Okay.
So, and doing that has worked pretty well. They haven't had any call quality issues.
On your average, what's the standard upstream service that most people are getting or most people have in their businesses?
We see it vary so much, but like, I think in the near future, it's going to increase. But most of the small businesses that just have like a 12 or a 15 meg circuit, depending on the carrier and the package, it'll vary from, you know, around 1 meg to max 2, which is like just barely enough,
right,
to consider doing VoIP. So we are, when it's one of those accounts, 7 phones is the max, and we're finding that even 7.
You're probably on the edge, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to start really, like, you better have a router that's capable of doing some bandwidth shaping, because otherwise it's not going to fly. One person at a time is always going to have a bad time. You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, the QoS, the quality of service, in those routers. That's why a lot of times, you know, and this is a side subject, I don't understand why these small businesses have the off-the-shelf Walmart router sitting on their shelves. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, I'm sorry, are you in the business of actually doing business, or are you in the business of playing business? And that's kind of how I feel about that. So, you don't have to buy the most expensive thing, but man, when you're talking about tying in phone services and internet service, it's like, you need to spend a little bit of money on your business. So I'm sure you see that when it comes to setting phones up, they have these high expectations and it's like, but you're only paying for this service, this level of service. And that's what you're going to get.
Yeah. And we're doing a site survey on one office right now, and they're in a charter spectrum territory. And for the same price, actually it's cheaper. It's like almost half the price of what Time Warner charges in other territories. They're getting 60 megs by four.
Okay.
For less than what Time Warner charges for like 12 megs by 1.5.
Right.
So, or like, oh, why can't, I know, but I haven't seen the consistency. Like I haven't, they're not hooked up yet. We haven't run speed tests. So I don't know if it's, you know, mileage may vary,
sure.
But that's a, like in, at least in Southern California where I'm familiar with the rates, that's an amazing value. Like nobody, businesses generally are going to get, they're going to pay $130 to $150 a month and they're going to get 12 or 15 megs. And they're going to get maybe 1.5 up.
Wow. So, okay.
So to pay $70 or $80 a month and get 60 by four is amazing.
Right.
You can get more, you know, you can always get more bandwidth. You can get a straight fiber connection. You're going to pay between $300 and $800 a month, depending on where you are. So.
Well, I remember even when cable was, you know, popular, a lot of people, you know, in businesses and different things would have, you know, they would have the steady service, the 1.5 up and 1.5 down, and that was supposed to be this great service back then, and they would run phone lines and, you know, internet and stuff off there, and I'm just like going, and then they would wonder why they had problems, and I'm like, because you don't really have much bandwidth, and I said, you know, we could go, I mean, even your Comcast service, you're looking at, you know, back then it was 20 down, 5 up, you know, and a lot cheaper, but for whatever reason, whoever set these businesses up really set them up and just were just making a ton of money. I was like, and you know, not for that great a service either. It was kind of weird.
Yeah. One of my first clients, they were on a T1 and they were paying $800 a month for one meg.
Yeah.
Symmetrical.
That's what I was talking about. T1 lines. You know, they were the static, you know, up and down, but it was like such low bandwidth that you're just like, wow.
I've also found, and I don't have any data to support this, but in our experience using, like actually using it though, that because T1 is, it's kind of it's a cleaner connection. It's not apples and oranges. Like if you've got a DSL 12 meg circuit over here and like a one or three, you know, kind of T1 kind of connection, you actually might have a better experience on the smaller T1 than you would on the DSL, depending on where, like the age of the copper and stuff that's connected, because it's clean. It seems to be cleaner and less interference. It's not a shared network and you get a more consistent pipe. So,
oh, I agree. Yeah. And that's why they give you the, you know, it's a certain amount up and a certain amount down, and it never is supposed to drop with the T1 lines.
Right.
But with today's day and age, it's like, you know, I look at it even for my home. It's like I just try to throw as much bandwidth as I possibly can at it. You know, I've got, you know, 120 down and 20 up. Now, do I need that? No. But it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a very similar speed here. And if it seems like if whatever robots are in charge are not paying attention, I can get 50 megs up. And I'm like, I don't know what I would even do. Like, I don't want to host a server out of my house. But 50 megs up is awesome. But yeah, I can't get that on a business, any of my business clients.
That's what I've heard in different areas. A lot of people are complaining about that. It's actually more expensive for businesses in brick and mortar to get those services than it is for, and they won't put residential lines a lot of times in those businesses. Nope. They make you get the business. And I'm like, to me, that is just so criminal, but I kind of get it, but I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm more offended by the phone, you know, the phone providers around here charging more for business and providing less bandwidth because they actually have business hours on their technical support and their call time, you know, their resolution time and appointments and everything are not really all that great.
Okay.
Whereas the local I'll say it, Time Warner. They have 24-hour support. You can talk to a level 3 tech pretty easily if you really need to get in there and figure out a difficult problem. They'll do same day appointments if it's early enough in the day when you call. Like you're paying for something, you're getting something. Like they're dropping fiber to the building and then just distributing it from to the suites through coax. So It's different. It's a better service than you get from home.
I agree, and I don't find it, as long as they're doing what they say they're supposed to be doing, as long as they have that support, I agree that you know, for a business, again, it's those business costs, and you've got to spend money in your business to have the quality of service so that you're not having to sit there and be down for, you know, hours at a time. And, you know, you can get that stuff resolved a lot quicker. Or I should say, you can get a lot of that stuff resolved in the same day versus, you know, a week. You know, so.
Right. Yep.
No, I don't have a problem with that. I just, as long as the companies are doing what they say they're supposed to be doing. So anyways, that's a side note, but go ahead and continue on with, what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's all related. okay, so. All right. So if you have an IP phone system, there's multiple different ways that it could be set up. So on the inside of your network, you're definitely going to have IP-based phones. It's either going to be an app, it's a soft phone app on your smartphone, but it's connected over, you know, it's still connected to a network, so it's IP, or an actual like desk phone connected to the network. But from there, you could either connect it to what's called a gateway, and the gateway basically connects your IP phones to analog phone lines. So you've got four business phone lines coming into the office, and you connect them up to this gateway, and then you still need some kind of an IP-based phone system and the IP phones. But if you just, like, there's offices around here that get... the best they can get is a 3 meg circuit from AT&T, and the infrastructure's not there, but they want new phones, and they don't want to, you know, they want a modern phone system. And now it's just easier to buy an IP based phone system, even though you're not using a hosted like SIP provider. You're still going over the old copper to make your calls, but the phone system has a gateway that interfaces it. So on the inside of the network, you've got IP, you have VoIP, but still using the phone system to carry the calls. So it's really just a new way of doing an old thing, because that's exactly what an old PBX would do.
Okay. You know? All right. I gotcha.
Let's see. You could get a SIP trunk, a SIP trunk is... You would subscribe to a trunk service from like CallCentric is one that we have used in the past, but there are so many providers of SIP trunks. Most of the big hosted VoIP providers also will provide a SIP trunk. And all the SIP trunk is just the one piece where you're taking an IP VoIP system, and at some point it's got to make calls out on the public phone system. So that when you dial a phone number, it can get out and make that call and connect to that phone number. Skype's free when you're not calling phone numbers because it never touches the public phone system. It's all just within the internet.
Right. Okay.
But once you have to break out of the internet and actually connect to the phone system where the call's routed, then somebody's got to pay for that. I don't know who they're paying. they're paying somebody, but you use the SIP trunk service, so you don't, you know, all you know is that you're paying CallCentric, for example, and when you make a call, they handle that interchange for you. Some of those services will charge by the minute. You know, again, they have different price structures. They may not charge for incoming, but they do charge for outgoing. You might get a flat rate for unlimited. Domestic calls, but then pay by the minute, international or something like that. But so if you have your own IP-based PBX system of some kind, you could just connect them to the SIP trunk provider, and just basically all you're paying to the provider is that monthly charge to connect your calls to the public phone system.
Okay. All right.
And then there's just hosted, where you don't own, you basically just have phones on your desk that are connected to the internet, and they just go straight up to whoever your provider is, and everything is handled from there. You kind of just call them up or send them an email and say, hey, this we need this extension created. make this extension for us, and we're going to plug a phone in, and there it is. You know, so it's kind of like a completely managed solution, all the way down to, you know, you're basically handling everything yourself.
Okay.
So going into our actual like deployments and experiences with VoIP systems, the first one we did, and I already briefly talked about it, so I won't do the whole thing again, but I didn't know anything about phones, like your phone systems, except that when I was a kid, my dad had a like, do you ever see the AT&T Merlin systems?
No, I don't think so.
They were like 10 extension, four line kind of, it was this big box that you'd mount up like in the crawl space or something, or in the phone room. And it was just a, it's just an analog PBX system. And it was this, it was literally like 4 feet across and 2 feet deep, just big chunk of metal. And all it did was connect 10 phones. That's all it did. I'm sure it had modules you could add to it and have more features, but this thing was expensive, and it just like, you could transfer calls between extensions and the phones rang when somebody called.
Okay.
That was it. That was all it did. So, but AT&T has a system called a Synapse now. The phones themselves are IP, so you just hook up your phones to your network. They just connect up to a switch on your network, and there's nothing special. You connect the control box, the Synapse, like it has a main control piece that's rack mountable. And you just plug that into the network all by itself. It's best to assign static IPs in all these situations. It just kind of works better, especially the if you're using a PBX, like the control system should be static.
Okay.
But the phones, almost all IP phones now, I haven't seen one that wasn't like this, so I could just say all, I guess. They all have a pass-through switch. So if you're at a desk and there's a computer there and you want to put a SIP phone there, you plug in the network connection to the phone, and then there's a pass-through to go to the computer. And they both get their own individual IPs. It's just like there's literally a switch built into each phone.
Oh, okay.
So for the most part, it works out. If possible, like anytime we can, we'll make sure there's two drops at each desk and they're separate. But for the most part, it works just fine.
Okay.
So we have these AT&T Synapse phones. I think the control box was like $150, and then the gateway that connected it to the analog phones that they had was another $150, and then each phone's around $120-$150 or something. So because they only needed like four phones, their total investment on the phone system wasn't too bad. And they were able to continue using the analog phone lines that they had. But then if they wanted to up their bandwidth a little bit and connect it to a SIP trunk, they could. It was capable of doing that. So it was kind of a modular system that you could expand out, and it could support, I think it was like 40 phones. And if you wanted to buy an expansion module, you could add another 40 phones to it. So it could hold, it could run a large office environment. And built into the whole thing, it has the whole automated attendant and ring groups. Like, it had a lot of features. I didn't like that you're stuck with the AT&T Synapse phones. You couldn't bring in any other phones. And those phones are worthless without the control box.
Okay, gotcha.
So you're locked in. But it was a pretty affordable solution with a lot of features, and it was pretty easy to set up. And that was my first run-in with any kind of like voice over IP. So we were using IP phones and a gateway. And it worked. I wouldn't not recommend it. If somebody really wanted something simple, and maybe today they need analog phone lines, but in the future they plan to go SIP trunk, then this system would do both. So, you know, not a bad investment.
Okay.
Then at that point, and I think my notes here are a little too detailed. I'm going to trim them down a little bit. But from there, we wanted to go, okay, like, what's really, like, we're going to do VoIP all the way. We want to know everything. I want to build one from scratch. So if you're going to do this, I don't think you should deploy VoIP to your clients until you've done something similar to this, personally, because once you've deployed a PBX distribution of your own, you've run into a lot of problems and solved them, and you kind of have a better concept of how the whole system works. And you can do all this for free. What we did was, and this is the hindsight version of actually what we should have done.
Exactly. That is why you are here, to give the expertise of what not to do.
Yeah, I mean, we did so many things. These are all the things that we did that actually were helpful. So if you go to freepbx.org and search, or just Google search free PBX distro, it's a Linux. Free PBX is a layer on top of Asterisk. Asterisk is an old school open source phone system software, complete software. You can install it on anything. Free PBX is another open source layer that gives you a more user-friendly interface so that you can actually, because Asterisk, I believe, used to all be command line. And even though there are Asterisk interfaces now that are a little easier to deal with, Free PBX is designed to be a GUI and easy to configure.
Okay.
So it's not 100%, but for the most part, especially for this just testing purposes, it's great. Like, it's free and you can download it. It's pretty easy to install and you can be up and running in a pretty short amount of time. Because this is mostly going to be disposable. Like, this is just for learning. So, basically, so you go and you download an ISO. There's a 32-bit and a 64-bit. It doesn't really matter which one you choose. If you're going to use a VM like we did, then 32-bit's probably better for a VM, I think.
Okay.
And then there's like an alpha version and there's a stable version. So I would recommend the stable version. And then it's a CentOS-based distribution. There are there's like a billion different ways that you can install Free PBX, but if you're just going to grab this ISO and throw it in a VM and have it up and running in a few minutes, I would, just know that this is CentOS. So if you're setting up a VM or like if you have a NAS, like a QNAP or Synology, and you've got a virtualization manager, then use that by all means. But either way, you're going to create like a VM or load up an old PC and throw this ISO on there, and it will be up and running pretty quick. There's a guide, like a very, very good. They have a wiki, so it's wiki.freepbx.org. If you just search Google for Free PBX distro installation guide, you'll find this page. I'm going to throw some of these links in an email to you, Jeff, so you can post them.
Great. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Follow the guide. It should literally take you 20 minutes to get the whole thing like installed, just kind of basically running. One little tip, they'll tell you to set a static. You can go into the OS. You have to go into the command line of CentOS and set a static IP for the base operating system. Or if you have a router that can do address reservation, just find the MAC address in your router, in your DHCP table, set the static that way, and then you don't have to go into the command line of the OS.
Yeah, I always do that, even with all the machines and stuff I have here, because I'm constantly hooking up other computers, customer computers to the system. So I reserved, a certain amount of IPs for each and everything that connects so they're not, finding a new IP address. So that makes sense. Now, so you're basically talking about you can do it in a virtual machine, but you're basically taking a server, so to speak, whether it's a virtual machine or even an old box that you have, and you're going to run this Free PBX on there.
Right. So this is going to be a way. I'll step back for a second. We're going to build a quick IP VoIP PBX that's on our local network. We're going to use some form of SIP phone, whether it's a free app available on Android or iOS. If you happen to have something that's, if you actually have a phone, an IP phone, then great. We're going to connect them all up on the same network, and we're going to make intercom calls to test it out. And then we're going to hook it up to a SIP trunk that is also can be free or very cheap, like dollars per month.
Okay.
To test it out. So you'll be able to actually have a phone number and make phone calls out to your cell phone or call into this little phone system. So you're just building a little lab. And like I said, the great thing is like you don't really could do this completely for free or and really once you've kind of gone through this little like list of stuff that we've found works the best, you can do it pretty quick. Like you'll be done building it, testing it, and playing with it in an hour or two, you know, maybe more, but you know, so you don't have to waste a lot of time, you don't have to waste any money, and now you've built yourself a whole lab of a complete VoIP system connected to the public phone system and making phone calls, and now you kind of know like start to finish how this all flows, you know.
So I'm under. Yeah, you'll probably get into this, but it's a burning question. So we've set up a server, so to speak, for this PBX system to basically on our network to create a phone system with extensions and all these different things, the ability to be able to do that. Now how do you get? Because obviously there has to be a governing body that governs the phone numbers that we use that go out into the real world. So how do you get a phone number to, you know, or who do you get a phone number from to hook into this system?
That's where your SIP trunk provider comes in.
Okay.
They are the ones responsible for providing you with a phone number. You can do a port. So if you have a number and you wanted to give it to like, just like if you were switching cell phone carriers and you wanted to port your number, all of these numbers can be ported from provider to provider. So if you're jumping over to a SIP trunk provider and then you want to change to hosted, you can port your number and keep your number. And then now it's over here and whatever it's pointed to, is where the phone will ring. So,
it's kind of like a domain name. You know, you go and buy a domain name that's going to, you know, point in a certain direction. You can point that domain name to any web service or any web page that you've built or, you know, however you want to do it. And so kind of the same thing with the phone system, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that's how I would describe it. Because you used to have, like with if you have analog phone lines, you have to get four phone numbers if you want four concurrent calls. And then you set up a hunt group. So when somebody calls the main number, if that number is busy, it just jumps in it, and the phone system calls the second number in your group, or calls the third number in your group, or the fourth number. With VoIP, that is not how it works. They call it's literally like a domain name. It calls that number, and that points it to you. And if you've got channels available, it just sends the call through. So, but the number's portable, and you know it can take a couple weeks to finish a port, which sucks.
Right. Yeah. I've done that actually a few times now, moving from one system to another. So I definitely feel the pain there, but, yeah. So, okay. So now when you're saying that you can get a phone number cheap through a provider, because obviously, you know, if you go get a cell phone and you get the phone number or whatever, I mean, you're paying for a service. So are you saying that you can get a number inexpensively and maybe you're paying for that number on a monthly basis, but you're creating your own phone system, so there really is no. I mean, where is there money involved in a free setup like this?
Yes. Well, okay. Yeah, sort of. So if you're just doing a test and you don't want to spend a dime, and I haven't looked at this for over a year, so I could be, maybe my information's outdated, but like callcentric.com is one provider.
Okay.
We really, really, really liked them because their support was amazing and we needed help. They helped us with free PBX. It had nothing to do with them. Like their system was working fine. And they gave us some detailed help setting up our PBX system when we were having problems with it. So callcentric.com, they did give us for testing and whatever, they'll give you a DAD, direct inward dial, I think is what it stands for, but so in VoIP world, you'll see you'll hear DID a lot. That's basically just a phone number. They'll give you a DID that's available for inward calling only for free.
Okay.
So at least you can pick up your cell phone, call the number, and your iPad should ring, and you can have a conversation. I don't know why it's free, except that they're not paying interchange rates apparently for a phone number. And they buy them internet providers have blocks of IP addresses. They just buy an A block or whatever.
Okay.
I believe that these carriers buy a block of phone numbers. So
it's like candy, not, kids. Get one, get two. It doesn't really matter.
Sure. We'll never run out. So with CallCentric, if you want an active, like, you know, normal phone number that you can actually make calls from, it's like $6 a month. And then you can buy blocks of minutes. I don't remember the pricing, okay. But we were running a business for less than $20 a month.
Okay. So you're still paying somebody for the minutes to use that phone number as an in and out.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's significantly cheaper than the phone company.
It sounds like it. Yeah, because the phone number, you're paying all kinds of surcharges and, you know, like you said, exchange and this and that and the other and whatever. You know, I just noticed on my cell phone bill, which really irritated me today as I was looking it over, because it was a little bit higher, and I'm like going, why is there a $9.95 administrative cost in my phone bill? It's just insane.
Yeah. So this was the seductive, like, it's Star Wars Day. Why not call it the dark side? We were getting sucked into this. Because you're like, okay, so we could host, we could spend $20 a month hosting a free PBX droplet up on there's a company called freepbxhosting.com, but there's also like DigitalOcean or whatever, right? You could host a cloud server for maybe $20 a month, pay the interchange rates to your SIP trunk provider. Let's say it's expensive and you're spending $50 a month.
Okay.
And so you're spending $70 a month. You don't really have like a limited number of lines at that point. You're basically just, okay, why wouldn't we do this? And why wouldn't we sell it for $120 a month or more?
Because right.
they were paying $300. So we just saved them, let's say $120, and we're charging $180 or something.
Right.
We'll be like printing our own money, right? Yeah. That we don't do that anymore because you could make a business of it. If this is something you wanted to do, you totally could do that. It wasn't that bad. Some of the problems we were having had a lot to do with a specific model of modem that was provided by the internet or by UVerse. And I don't remember the name of the model. I just remember that we were pulling all, like, just tearing our hair out, trying to figure out why calls were dropping, all kinds of stuff. And it turned out that this one particular model of modem, after many, many Google searches, just even if you put it in strict pass-through mode, it didn't really respect it. It was still trying to run algorithms on it, and it was interfering with the VoIP traffic. And as soon as we got them to change it with a different model, problem solved. So
it sounds like an Aeris modem.
Yeah, it was a Motorola. Okay. There's an Aeris NVG 510, I think, that actually works really well.
Okay. Well, Motorola and actually Aeris are pretty much the same now. So
they are, because this exact same model,
yeah.
Like the exact same model. We have two side by side. One of our clients has two circuits coming in, and they have two of the exact same modems. One of them was made before the takeover, and one of them was made after. One of them says Motorola, and the other one says Aeris.
Yep.
But they have the same everything else.
Yep, you got it.
They just stamped it different exactly. Name. It's funny to see them side by side because I'm like, oh, look at somebody bought out Aeris, bought out Motorola, or Motorola bought Aeris. I don't know which one, but
yeah, we don't know. It's whatever.
Anyway, so some of our problems were related to that, but we'd already kind of abandoned. Like, we're like, oh man, this is too heavy. Like, our customers were upset because they. For the most part, everything worked fine, but they were having a promotion and they had call quality issues that were costing them money, and it was our fault. So
let's step back a little bit. So you basically get a number, the number calls in, and then once you have this system set up, obviously you're probably setting up on-prem servers or using cloud servers. And once that number is coming in, you can shove it out to as many extensions and different things you want using these free services like free PBX, you know, in with the asterisks and all that. Is that yeah. Kind of where we're at?
Yeah. Like, so I'll give you the exact setup that we had. So we had a free PBX running in a freepbxhosting.com server.
Okay.
So that was a cloud server. We had a number, we had a, well, actually, how many numbers? I think we had 4 or 5 phone numbers registered as a SIP trunk to that cloud server using callcentric.com.
Okay.
And they, the client had 5 offices that were running, and we'd put these SIP phones, one, you know, just no server on premise, just strictly connected to the cloud server.
Okay.
It was distributed. So the nice thing about the way this, the reason that this was working as well as it did, even though we were having problems, was that because it was distributed amongst several offices, each one had their own bandwidth pipe. It wasn't like we were taking 50 phones in one office and running it through a small pipe.
Gotcha.
We were taking like between 2 and 7 phones each spread out across, you know, 5 offices.
Okay. Okay.
So that was kind of a lucky win for us. If we, you know, if it had been a different setup, we probably still would have run with it and run into different problems. But yeah, so then all those extensions are spread out across all those offices. We have inbound routes that are configured through the PBX where you say an incoming number that was like the caller dialed this number. That number is associated with this group of phones that are out, you know, that are sitting in this particular office over here. And then somebody calls a different number. That number needs to go over to those phones that are in that office over there. So even though all of the phones are all on one unified system and they can interchange and transfer and conference calls, all, it doesn't matter where they are, what office they're in, this group of phones is associated with this ring group. Like this is the ring group for this, you know, the central branch ring group.
Okay.
And if they call the central branch phone number, those phones ring. And then if they call office number 2, we assigned all the phones in office number 2 to ring group 2. And those, you know, so now that becomes the association. So when that number is called, those phones ring. So it actually worked. It worked perfectly fine. It was great. Once we got that modem issue figured out, because that was a big problem. They were having a lot of problems.
So is it better to have an on-prem server, or the cloud servers work just perfectly fine for what you're doing in most cases?
If you want to do some like testing and homework and figure that other piece out, I know that FreePBX does have a way to do that. Like you could put on-prem servers and build your local FreePBX, and then over the internet they can still talk to each other. And then they can also be connected to SIP trunks and stuff. Like you could do that. We kind of scrapped the roll your own thing at that point.
Gotcha. Okay.
We were also getting attacked because the server has value as Bitcoin mining and other nefarious usage. So we found that we were checking our security logs, and we were getting no one had broken in, and as far as we could tell, and taken over the server, but it was getting attacked.
Okay.
All the time, constantly. And we're like, you know what? I don't really want to become a CentOS security administrator. Like, that's not my thing. Like, that's not why we did this.
Right.
You know, like, we didn't want to get into having to really lock down this system. Plus, it's sitting up in someone's cloud thing. So there was... we couldn't do everything that we might have been able to do had we been hosting it ourselves, and we didn't want to host it ourselves. Just sort of became this like daunting thing. Like, let's not do this anymore. Let's just find a good provider that's hosted, and hopefully we can get a sales commission relationship with them and make at least some money off of this and not be the ones that are directly responsible for maintaining it, because that's not our specialty. That's not what we wanted to do.
Right. Okay.
So, I have a... well, actually, we had a friend, a business, you know, that's kind of a friend, and he had that. He had a free PBX server on site hooked up to the SIP trunk, and he had multiple set up, like multiple offices, each with their own little free PBX server. And he ended up scrapping it and just going with us and using ours because it was easier and not much more expensive. Like, he wasn't really spending any more. And he kind of gave up all of his headaches. So,
well, yeah, it sounds from a maintenance standpoint, it sounds like you're over the internet anyway. So why not use somebody else's server to serve out what you need, you know, as far as a phone system, because I mean, you're using that bandwidth anyhow. So why have, you know, necessarily an on-prem server that's going to do that? If cost is not that much different. I didn't know if there was a difference in cost or if one worked better over the other. But if they both work identically the same, except one you have to, the on-prem one, you're going to have to maintain more, then obviously, yeah, using a cloud server is going to be a better fit, I think.
The problem we noticed is that because we were using a cloud provider for our hosted server that is known, like they specialize in hosting PBX servers.
Okay.
They probably, like, we get a static IP from them. That was one of the things that they provided. So they give us a static IP. Well, that IP, their whole block of IPs that they purchased, right, were all used to host PBX systems. So if you're someone in another country and you want to hack into a PBX system, there's a block. You know that every IP address within this block is somebody's PBX system, and you know that they're all being self-managed and that some of them are not up to date, and that if you know any security holes, you can find them and use them. So we were worse off using this hosted provider from a security standpoint because we were in a targeted range of IP addresses.
Gotcha. Okay.
Had we been hosting it ourselves on our own equipment from our own IP address, you know, there's bandwidth and whatever, uptime and thing, other things to consider when you do that. But we're in kind of a random scattershot IP address range that nobody's necessarily looking at specifically to attack a known, because it's all this company did was host free PBX CentOS systems. So if you found out how to break into one of them, you would know how to break into pretty much all of them, and you would know the range of IP addresses that they were all sitting on.
Gotcha. Okay.
It just seemed like a bad idea.
Gotcha.
And we were getting like hundreds of attacks, like, or probes at least a day.
Oh, that's just being on the internet. Going to get you that there. You know, people would be surprised that how many probes have gone to your router on your own network on a regular basis. It's literally thousands and thousands a day. But nobody realizes it because, you know, routers are smart enough, or however we have our things set up, we're blocking a lot of those from even being able to do anything. So,
right.
But
and part of the challenge of defending PBX is that SIP protocol tends to use port 5060 to initiate the conversation.
Okay.
Which means that you have to open port 5060. You can configure it for a different port, but it becomes very challenging at that point because everything wants to use that port. So you're not only you have a known operating system and a known distro version and on a known range of IP addresses with an open port that you know the number of. Like, it's just an open invitation to trouble.
Sure.
Because they know everything they need to know to start. Like, it's not like they're just randomly hitting IP addresses and sending random probes. They can send very specific targeted attacks at that point. Like, they know everything they need to know. If they know how to get in, they'll get in at that point. So we just shut it down because it was too important. It's somebody's phones.
Right. Now, from a PBX system, though, I mean, really, the only thing they're going to be able to do really is basically stop the service from working, though, right? I mean, what can you do on a PBX phone system? What type of network traffic would you have that's going to even matter, that's even important? I could see infecting a computer and, you know, using it as a botnet, but there's a PBX phone system. What's that going to do?
Well, whatever they can do on Linux.
Oh, no, come on now. Linux is, you know, that's unpenetratable.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
I just made the word up.
impenetrable.
Yeah, yes. There you go.
No, there's a known attack to take over a free PBX system to be used as a data miner for generating bitcoins.
Oh, okay. I got you.
That's
one
example.
Okay.
But there's anything that anybody wanted to do with a CentOS server.
Gotcha. Because, you're right. You're still talking about a server. Once you've compromised a server, you can use it in the same way. Okay. That makes sense.
So mostly the worst case scenario, they'll just chew up all your bandwidth cycles and your phones won't work.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm thinking. To me, quite honestly, that is the worst case scenario. Cause, yeah, I don't want my bandwidth being eaten up when I need to make a phone call.
Yeah. So.
All right.
Anyway, so basically we went through all of that and it was a great learning experience. I wish that we hadn't experimented with a live client on hosting their phones through that system. Because there was a bad time there when they were running a promotion and their phones were having trouble. And we later found out it actually had nothing to do with... See, the problem was we didn't discover that it wasn't our fault.
Right.
It was the modem. It was that modem that we were talking about.
Right. Okay.
Until after the fact. But because we were hosting the system and we had installed the system and it, you know, there were so many unknowns and we didn't have an answer at the time, it looked really bad. We couldn't just go over and say, well, it's AT&T's fault. They suck. Like, they didn't do their job. It was, no, this is our phone system and it's broken. We're responsible.
Right.
It looked like we were. We weren't. But I'd rather take that. I would rather, because we provide a bunch of solutions. We're everything to our customers. We are the entire IT department. We don't want to specialize in providing VoIP service. So we use a hosted provider that we like, you know, and we've worked with and we've vetted and we constantly shop around. You know,
okay.
If I find a better solution, I'll go with it. So far, I've been shopping pretty hard for the last 6 months, and I haven't found a better solution.
So, if you don't mind, go ahead and what services are you using to set up your PBX phone systems now for your customers?
What we like to use right now, we're still very big fans of the Yealink line of phones.
Okay,
there is. Basically three levels that they have. They have their 20 series, their 30 series, and their 40 series. And call quality wise, they're all identical. So what you're paying for essentially is appearance and features. So the 20 series typically don't have a gigabit pass-through port. So if you need a gig network and you're using one connection to go through the phone to your PCs, you're going to lose your gig connection if you use the 20 series. And they're black and white LED screens or LCD screens. They work fine. They're good phones, whatever. But we don't use them because they don't have gig and because the screen's kind of boring and it doesn't cost much more to upgrade.
Okay.
The 30 series phone we used to recommend, but because the 40 series phone is so much better looking and... they discontinued the 130 series phone that we used a lot. It has like all the different programmable keys down the side. That phone's been discontinued. So now we basically recommend the 40 series. They're executive, they're beautiful, they're not very expensive, and they have gig, they have color screens, and the buttons are all like on-screen soft keys. So you don't have to like cut little tiny P-Touch labels down to size and stick them on these little things so that you can label all the keys. It sounds like, dude, that when I tell you we could deploy a group of phones in an hour, that doesn't involve labeling all the little side programmable keys. Like, that's another hour. It's annoying. So these phones, you don't have to do that.
Keys. Cool.
You label them in the software and they just display what they do on the screen and it's better. So anyway, Yealink T42, I think, is the phone that I like the best.
Okay.
But there's Polycom still compatible with these, exactly the same thing. I think Cisco and those are like the three big brands. But we're just Yealink all the way because they're cheap and they work well. So we use a company called, I mentioned them before, but I'll mention them again, a company called Voice Carrier.
Okay.
Voicecarrier.com. If you want to get in touch with them, you can call Jeff Johnson, and his number is 650-644-1801. Mention us because they will give us a little credit for bringing in new accounts. So I would appreciate it if you did.
Excellent. Yeah. And definitely give me those links and information in there. We'll get those in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then And if you want to create your own reseller account, they're great to work with. Their pricing is based on, the reason we like them is because they don't base their pricing on the number of users or extensions or phones. They provide a certain number of like concurrent active channels, which equates to number of calls you can have at one time. And if all your calling is domestic, then it's flat. Like you have a set fee for getting, and then if you're the, like for us, because we're the provider and we know how to handle it, the PBX level, we can jump in and do a lot of configurations ourselves. And then anything that we either don't feel like doing because we don't have time, or if it's a little above my pay grade, or I don't want it to, you know, it's like something I don't really feel confident with, I just email or call our support and they get it done. So it's a great balance between having control and being able to do a lot of stuff ourselves, so that for one, we can get it done fast. Two, we look responsive to our clients and we understand what's going on. And then three, it's somebody else's problem, really. Like they'll do everything if you want them to. So we really like them and their prices. I was going through trying to get a competitive bid against them and they're like, are you crazy? They're getting that for that price? Like that's unheard of.
Wow. Okay.
So
very cool.
Another company that I wanted to, I haven't done a project with them, but I've been talking to them and I'm going to go have lunch with this gentleman named Steve tomorrow, actually. And the company is called Simplified Telecommunication Corporation. What I liked about them and why I'm continuing to talk to them is they will provide assistance getting a hosted solution like what we do set up. But they also are like, they don't have any minimum requirements for, you know, no quotas or anything like that. They're basically, I mean, they make money on it. They obviously have to, but they basically are like your backup, like your partner, like somebody, if you have somebody that needs a big phone system or needs a phone system and you want, someone that's going to be basically your advisor, but also provide you with good pricing so that you can still do a markup and make money yourself on the installation. These guys seem to be, you know, like I said, I haven't done an actual project with them, but they have vendor connections so they can get like actual representatives from the vendor involved and even on site. So if you want to give them a call, it's STC, Simplified Telecommunications Corp. Steve Hobson is the gentleman I've been speaking with. His number is 800-568-0108. And once I've done a project with them, I can give you guys an update. But okay. I've talked to them a lot, and they seem really good. Voice carrier is kind of similar in that way, though. Like they'll just provide a SIP trunk if that's what you need. They have engineers that I talk to all the time that are really knowledgeable about getting us through some network issues. So, I mean, both of those companies are great in my. But I have worked a lot with voice carrier. We have a lot of clients on their system, so I can kind of vouch for them more. But yeah, so that's really, so today what we do is if it's an office of about 7 or 8 max phones, depending on their bandwidth, you know, and their bandwidth being like, you know, hopefully they get like 2 megs up, really the downspeed at that point is irrelevant. It's the upspeed that you need to worry about.
Right. Okay.
We'll just throw them on voice carrier, strictly hosted, like done deal. It's easy. We just request the port. And in the meantime, we do like a forward. So there, once the VoIP system's like running, they get a temporary phone number. We forward their current number to the temporary number, wait for the port to happen. In the meantime, they're still using the phone system. Then one day the port happens, it doesn't change anything. They're still using the phone system, but now the port's gone because that old phone's number's been ported in, and done deal. Like it works great. It's easy. The prices are good. Support's good. Call quality's been very good. And they pay us a commission per, you know, a monthly commission for services we sign up. So we make a little money on it and we don't feel the need to host it ourselves, and everybody wins. So.
No, that sounds like a perfect scenario. So that's all the pieces that are put together for what you're doing today then.
Yeah. VoiceCare will have, they have engineers that will help us if we have a bigger, because they'll do like a hotel.
Okay.
And they may not go strictly hosted in that case. They might go on site, like on premise. Okay. And then maybe sip trunk. That's because that's generally how they'll make money on that kind of a deal. But they'll tell you like, nope, that's not a, you know, maybe you shouldn't go VoIP on this in this case. And then I would call STC and see what they can do for you guys. Cause then we can get an on-prem voice, like a PBX system and phone system set up, but not necessarily have, so like VoiceCare makes their money on the trunking or the hosted VoIP. Like they need to provide the phone service to make money. So if they can't, then it doesn't really work. But if you have a situation where you need to use a phone system using a gateway and you're not able to, because of the bandwidth constraints or the demand, you can't go hosted VoIP, then call STC and they'll help you get a phone system installed.
Okay.
That can work with maybe a hybrid approach or all analog, or maybe it's convertible. So those are, but yeah, that's, those are the two solutions we're using now.
Okay.
We've been pretty happy.
Well, that sounds good. Now, is there anything else that you wanted to cover? I mean, we're going a little bit long here, but you know, a lot of information, good information on, I think it gives, as long as you give me those links, I think a lot of people can, you know, play around with this on their own systems and kind of see how it's going to work so they can take that out there and, you know, maybe provide that for some of their customers.
No, I think I dumped enough. You know, again, I think I just say like the only reason that I really wanted to talk about this and get more, you know, knowledge out there. One, I'm not an engineer. I'm sure I messed up and gave some, if somebody really knows more than me, they probably found a bunch of holes in what I said or I was missing something. But so, you know, and I am happy to learn about anything if somebody has a disagreement with what I said. So but it was really more just to help everyone if they haven't had any experience with VoIP.
Right.
Get that intro, have kind of a direction of how they can test it out and learn about it, because it's coming whether you like it or not. And if your customers need a phone system and you can't provide it, it's just another one of those things that if you can say yes, you'd like to be able to say yes. It makes you look better as their provider and more knowledgeable. And it doesn't make you turn away a sale. Like, why would you, if you can make the sale, then make the sale. And we found that when we didn't control it, people would go out and get their own stupid phones and they'd be really unhappy with them. And then we'd be sitting there going like, well, sorry, that's not what we do.
Right.
So it's something we can prevent them from going down the wrong road or spending money on something that they ended up having to spend again because they weren't happy with the outcome. So all in all, I think if you're doing business IT support, you should at least know who to call when somebody wants a VoIP system.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you there. This is something definitely is I think should be part of the business. And, you know, it's one of those things, and especially if you can save the company, you know, money and stuff. But I'll tell you what, if people want to get in touch with you and ask you some more questions about this, you know, as you're learning and as other people are learning and trying to do this in their own businesses, what would be the best way to do that?
Well, I think the easiest way, because I know the link's going to be right there. If you go to my website and go to ttcscomputerservices.com, there's a contact form. My email address, I'm happy to receive any emails you guys want to send, brad@ttcscomputerservices.com. I don't mind phone calls, absolutely, but I've been getting so many unsolicited Google search SEO bot calls from various area codes. I'm having, like, I may not necessarily answer your call if you call me from an area code I don't know. So, but if you set up, because I know if all my customers are either in one of like two or three area codes. So if you're calling me from outside that, I may not answer. But definitely send an email or a contact and we can get on the phone, or I can point you in any direction. Or if you want to set me straight on something, I'll learn something, then that's cool too.
All right. Very cool. No, I understand. Yeah. As far as my phone number, you know, I don't answer. I have a separate phone line for my business. So if it's an unknown number that's coming in, you know, or you know, even a weird out of state number or whatever, if it's not one that is programmed in my phone, I don't answer it at all. So I feel you there. No, well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing all this information on the show. I've learned a lot, and it's definitely something I'm going to play around with and see what I can do with it, because I think, like you said, it's going to be important for people out there to, you know how to do this, or find somebody that does know how to do this and, you know, help the customer out. So again, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And just quick mention, like I had a couple of contacts from the last call, and I ended up meeting with a gentleman named Anthony out here in Huntington Beach. And so, I mean, I like doing these shows, but it's actually a way to meet new people around here that I didn't even know existed. So
there you go. That's yeah. Awesome. It is a small world, you know. So that's very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you guys can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hellish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on this show like Brad, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you guys want to leave a voicemail for the show, you can call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link in the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. If you guys could do us a favor, leave us a rating and review over on iTunes. That'll help more people know about us. And you guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price at all. It just puts a little change in the pockets of the Podnuts Network to give you these great shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.